Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Ophthalmologist Dr. Strauss has seen firsthand how the metaverse is helping surgeons practice the procedures to treat cataracts.
Cataracts are the primary cause of avoidable blindness.
He works with a virtual reality training platform developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International to help surgeons develop the muscle memory they need. The result? More confident, capable surgeons. And even more importantly,
patients who can see.
Explore more stories like Dr. Strauss's at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex Kirshner is back in his native land. And buddy, did you get some good news this morning? Happy Thanksgiving to you, my good friend.
Well, Pittsburgh Steelers fans have now joined myriad college football fan bases. Believe most recently LSU in
NC State,
in being at NC State, Pitt, and being able to say that Matt Canada is no longer their offensive coordinator. Although when it's funny because when he left Pitt, that was like one of the couple years where it was good Matt Canada.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, I just looked outside my parents' window in the suburbs, and there's actually a small parade going on.
Yeah,
strangers are hugging. You're seeing romantic affairs out
in
the street.
Do people just like throw French fries in the street the way that you would throw rice at a wedding? Is that how it works?
That's exactly what's happening. Yeah.
Ketchup champagne celebration?
Yeah. They're shaking it real.
Stephen Godfrey, how are you, sir?
Any of you who have already listened to the latest Substack Single Wing know that I am unable to take a completely deep breath. So this is going to be a marvel of video and audio editing today, as I am battling something horrific in my lungs. Otherwise, the same play callers in Atlanta because he's the head coach. So I'm great.
And Richard Johnson?
Every single week, you provide tremendous birth control. I'll tell you that right now.
Richard, how are you?
God.
How's your holiday week?
It's about to be cold as hell. It's
you spatchcocking this week? You spatchcocking?
You're damn right I am. I will have a post of the spatchcock turkey that went in the oven for my Friendsgiving on Friday. It will be a Thanksgiving themed post, and it will be good night. sorry, my phone just rang, which is weird because my phone's not supposed to ring on this thing.
Richard went from refusing to be on Instagram like some sort of like hardcore, almost like a straight edge Gen Zer, to he's on Instagram more than my mom's on Facebook. Like about it was a pronounced right turn.
About that money.
Were we leaving that all in or?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. We're leaving it all in.
All right, Anthony, leave it in. Audience, you get to hear all this. Fantastic. Some quick news of the week in college football before we get to the stuff of the week. Syracuse did finally fire Dino Babers. I say finally, not in that they had to do it before, but I think it was time. I hold two thoughts in my head at once about that. One, he didn't do a lot worse than anyone's going to do in that job. It's a very, very hard job. But two, I just think sometimes things get stale and it's just time to change out a coach. Like you retire a suit and you get yourself a new suit. And I respect Syracuse for
that. How many suits do you own?
You know, it's interesting. I actually own 4 suits now, the most I've ever owned in my life. And the suits I got very cheap. Where they get you is the tailoring.
Why did you buy a cheap suit?
Yeah, get a tailored suit.
Well, I got off the rack suits that I got tailored.
That's where you messed up.
The thing is, you can be gotten. No. You can be gotten one of two ways. You get got by buying the custom, or you get got on the tailoring. You're getting got either way. It's just two different routes to the same thing.
Maybe you're just paying for goods and services, Alex.
Even my suits are very good. I look quite good in them. I get compliments on them.
Vito, clip that, please.
Okay. Anyway, Syracuse out with Dino Babers. They're going to be in the market. They are now in the market. The Apple Cup and the Oregon State Civil War, as it is no longer officially called that, by the way. But I think most of the fan bases do seem to still call them that. And
it's the Civil War. All right. Grow up. I understand.
It's also the cocktail party.
I understand.
It's also Red River. It's a shootout, not a showdown.
Yes.
By the way, did you guys know that the official name of Texas and A&M is the Lone Star Showdown? That is corny as hell. Can we get like Bucky's Classic or something? Like we gotta work on that one for next year.
Yeah, but that was a good one that like doesn't really have a name. Like never really had like a name, right? It's just Texas A&M.
I think all games other than the game, which I'll see the game too, should have a nickname or a cup or a trophy or a bowl. Like,
or this is a dumbass sport. Spittoon. Or a
brass spittoon was like, dude, that's legit.
Yeah, Indiana in back-to-back weeks, we'll get to this, plays for the old brass spittoon and the old oaken bucket, or is it the brass spittoon, I think, and the old oaken bucket. The Big Ten's list of rivalry trophies sometimes breaks my brain. We will not be talking about the Land Grant Trophy between Michigan State and Penn State. We don't acknowledge that one. Some things are a bridge too far. It's too ugly.
Why?
It's too ugly.
It's not real.
What?
It's not real.
Someone's got to stand up against Chris Vanini and all of those people.
Exactly. Yeah, Chris, you're not getting away with this one, Chris.
No, you're not. Okay.
Sure.
Godfrey, what do you got for us other than this exciting news that this week's Apple Cups and Civil Wars will not be the last ones?
Wazoo and Oregon State have a giant Mountain West Cup. Shout out to a friend of the program, Alyssa. She used to run comms at the Mountain West on the old podcast. When this logo debuted, we called it the bastard child of two Transformers. And they spent, I don't even know how much money at the Mountain West to glitter bomb my house. My wife was pissed for a week. Like, when you opened the box, it was a glitter bomb. And in the bottom of it was a bunch of mountain. This is the only thing that I have left. And so,
YouTube audience, that's for you.
What do I have this week about? It's good that these rivalries are actually happening. This is a little bit of a softening of the blow. And I'm going to say this straight faced. I applaud the departing schools, the money grabbers, the haves. They didn't have to do this. And I know there was actually resistance on both of those who were left behind really kind of dug their heels in about the particulars of keeping these games alive. However,
it was funny. Because
universally, we can all agree that these games should always we want these games to be played as a college
Washington
football
left. Washington left, and Washington was like, "We would love to keep the Apple Cup going." And Washington State was like, "Bitch, what?" for the last three months,
it's in the yard. I don't want to fucking see you. The locks are already changed, which I totally get that energy. I can play again. As for Dino and Syracuse and Alex's conflicting thoughts, Richard and I are about to record. Let me tell you all what we're about to record. I brought the whole fucking carafe. Okay. We got one coming, boys, after this one. Richard and I are about to hunker down on your Thanksgiving week eyes list. So we're going to talk about Syracuse. We're going to talk about Texas A&M. We're going to talk about another school that isn't related to the previous two. And I was just trying to make the rule of three there. We're going through the whole damn list. And honestly, I'm actually, as a tease, go ahead and sign up at splitzoneduo.com. And if you are on that month gratis, go ahead and convert because your free trial is about to expire. I'm more interested to talk about a school that I know is not opening. Hint, hint. And it's in the power too.
Cool. splitzoneduo.com/subscribe. I look forward to listening. We're going to have a ton of stuff over on the Substack in the next couple of days. If you were a Patreon subscriber at the end of October, remember, as Godfrey alludes to, you are still getting everything this month. Your inbox is just coming from Substack now, not Patreon.
Are y'all getting this? This little ASMR?
But the trial, we are getting you pouring your coffee. But the trial ends.
I can't really hear it. I don't know if the listening audience can hear it. The YouTube audience, though,
The trial ends on December 2. If you enter your information, because we didn't take that with us from Patreon, enter your payment information at splitzoneduo.com/subscribe. Existing subscribers from Patreon will not be billed until that period runs out. But also, welcome to all the new subscribers. We have gotten a ton of people who weren't even with us on Patreon. Hundreds of you who have come aboard at the new Splitzone Duo premium home.
I believe it's thousands, actually.
Actually, technically, yes, it is thousands because we have a lot of people who just signed up for the email list as well.
The world's worst carnival barker.
I literally was about to say, you have got to get better at shameless self-promotion. Holy cow.
I mean, nothing shameless about it when you're bringing on subscribers to the new splitzoneduo.com. We'd love to see you
Hello,
there.
Hello, officer. We're going to be robbing this bank. Are you okay if I double park here very quickly while my comrades relieve the government of some funding? If not, that's okay. I'll park around the street. We're only going to be a couple minutes, sir.
You know, Steven, you bring up one of my worldviews, which is that if you do an undetected, unarmed, no threat of violence to anybody bank robbery, when you get caught and you get sent away for 20 to 30 or whatever it might be, you should get some percentage of it back from the government as a way to encourage creativity. Yeah.
You are like the liberal that was like engineered in a lab to make my dad go crazy, which I appreciate. Yeah, I appreciate your existence and I value you. And I'm not saying I'm somewhere in the middle of this mess, but I love it. It's like I want to take you on tour to piss people off in my life.
Take me on tour. Continue. Hold that thought.
Keep that energy.
Steven, Nokian Tires, before we get into the week.
Nokian Tires. Look, there are ad reads, there's testimonials, and then there's the absolute truth of what happened. As I record this, it was exactly 2 hours and 15 minutes ago. It is like there's like 3 hours of sunlight a day in Nashville, which if you didn't know, it has to do with the dateline, and it basically turns into Alaska. It's also raining sideways here, and it has been for 2 days. There's a hill that comes down from Vanderbilt into my neighborhood, and I was going up it and making a left turn in my Sierra. And I fishtailed with the kids in the car. Nothing crazy, Jesus. Nothing like super. It happens. It's all right. I know how to turn into it. However, do you know what the first thing my six-year-old said was? Dad, you need to put the podcast tires on the truck.
That's right.
What he's referring to are our friends at Nokian, because Nokian has sent me a brand new set of tires for my Sierra. I have not yet scheduled my mechanic to put them on. And now, after I fishtailed and almost hydroplaned completely in a giant 1500 Sierra, I'm going to do that. Our friends at Nokian, I trust them enough to put them on every vehicle that I own. I'll be driving 8 hours one way for Christmas. They invented the winter tire. And if you think winter tires aren't something that you need south of the Mason-Dixon, you do. Damn it, I thought I had this turned off. The emojis are back. I swear to God.
YouTube audience is really getting a show today.
The company just announced the Tennessee Green Star Partnership. And that's basically that Nokian is going to be one of the most sustainable tire manufacturers in the world. Also, you know what else Nokian does? They like to get involved with some live events. They like to get involved with some live events with a particular college football podcast. Mm. All right. So in the meantime, maybe just check out NokianTires.com. Mm. You're all about to be driving in the holidays. All right. Y'all about to be just dragging ass across some state you're probably not that familiar with. You need the safest tires possible. I need to get off my ass over the holiday weekend and go get my Nokians put on my truck so I don't fishtail through my own neighborhood. We think Nokian, they are proud to support college football road trips. They are proud to support Split Zone Duo.
And one more little bit of podcast business, because look, it's a podcast business time of the year. Before we get into the business of the week and shoot straight through, of course, our dear friends at Homefield Apparel. Speaking of events, things that everyone likes to do together out in the world, keep your eyes out at Homefield Apparel, both for some fun stuff that Homefield Apparel always does this time of year as we head into the holidays, and some fun stuff that we are going to be doing with Homefield Apparel in just the next couple of months that we're looking forward to telling you about very soon.
About to jack my own camera here live on the show.
Homefieldapparel.com. The promo code is SZD20 for 20% off your first order. Steven, what are you doing?
No, I'm still here. We'll keep all this in the show, please.
Yeah,
keep
okay. Richard, it is time. We've done a lot of housekeeping here. We've talked about things that we care about, our own business, our partners. We've talked about spatchcocking. Let's talk about Ohio State, Michigan.
You might want to define that, by the way.
You'll see it on my Instagram, RJ_CFB.
Oh, nice tease. All right.
Thank you. The game. With the team, and
yeah. Ohio State.
The other one.
Yeah,
and Ohio State, also Ohio State. Ohio State and Michigan is just finally here. My God in heaven, finally here. There is a very odd setup to this year's version of this game, in that Ohio State's coming into this game not just an underdog, but like under the radar. Like, Ohio State is not getting top billing going into this game. It's kind of crazy.
Do you think that that's more because Michigan is currently embroiled in one of the clickier scandals in college sports history, or because of something about the personalities, the play styles involved with these teams?
Look, it's the gestures at Michigan in general. Like, you talk about it being a clicky scandal. You ain't got to tell anybody more than me how clicky this scandal has been in the last month change that it's been going on. I think Ohio State, despite having the best player in the country, despite being Ohio State, despite being undefeated, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. Like, I feel like I remember Ohio State having a ghost loss that they did not take. Obviously, they beat Notre Dame. But, like, it feels like Ohio State has a ghost loss coming into this, right? Because it feels like there's some reason why they haven't been talked about. There's some reason why they are not okay on the current... And we'd be talking about, we should be talking about how Ohio State hasn't won this game in 2 years and gotten bludgeoned by Michigan both times.
So I'm going to let the audience in on a little bit, mainly because I was going to drill Richard. I was just going to use today's podcast as essentially an editorial meeting before I write my column for the Post, which I think is going to go up a little later, closer to the actual game time this week. I went into the Post meeting and we were talking about how this theory that Richard just touched on emerged, which is, how is it that arguably the biggest brand in college football is under the radar this year, and they're undefeated, and they have the best player, as Richard said, arguably. Please don't make me talk about the Heisman, but there's like validity to this, that Ohio State is somehow under-recognized. I mean, look, the Michigan media thing, it's a Leviathan, right?
Yes.
I think casuals might be listening to this and forget that this is the second series of suspensions that Harbaugh has served in a fucking year.
They could win the national championship and Jim Harbaugh would have sat half of the games.
Right. So that's the volume and the inventory of I think like mind space equity that Michigan has pulled from all of college football, not just the rivalry, but all of college football. But to that end, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about Ryan Day and I'm thinking about his overall record and I'm thinking about how preposterous it is that he's going to be quote unquote on a hot seat if/when he loses this game.
No.
And there's no legitimacy to that. And yet we know there is legitimacy. There's no legitimacy in logic, in reason. There's if you blind resume, let's say he loses the next two games, Michigan and the bowl game. If you blind resume this guy, he becomes the most hireable blind resume in the country. But it's also 3 in a row to Michigan, and we don't care. It's fascinating that this sport can create the idea of someone who's somehow underperforming with that piece of paper, with those stats next to his name.
I know you both know this because you are college football lifers and everyone listening to this gets it too. But I wonder if because of the reporting that you guys do, because you exist, you talk with coaches, you talk with agents, and you expect in the industry that there will be some kind of subjective evaluation where you'll look at all of Ryan Day's victories and you'll look at the way that he comes across as a pretty solid leader who stabilized things in some ways that they weren't stable under Urban Meyer and think this guy's great. But we can't talk out both sides of our mouth about what makes this sport great. And there are lots of ways.
Talking out of both sides of your mouth about what makes this sport, that's the literal marketing deck of the Southeastern Conference.
There are numerous ways in which I think Ohio State fans are crazed and conspiratorial all the time. But I have a hard time saying that the great thing about college football is how it all comes down to the rivalries and the one big game and the identity that you have for your program revolves around beating these guys. And if they lose 3 in a row, there are going to be plenty of Ohio State fans who are going to be fucking sick of that and who are going to want him to be fired, even though he's great.
So wait, what part of this makes you mad?
It doesn't make me mad, but I'm just pointing out that if I'm not suggesting that Gene Smith should see the world this way, but okay. Obviously, if they get shellacked by Michigan again in this game, there's going to be tons of Ohio State fans who are going to want the guy to be fired, and I cannot begrudge them that at all.
But it's the same thing as it's the same thing, not the exact same. It's a similar thing to James Franklin. If yeah. Ohio State loses, it's a similar dynamic to James Franklin.
Obviously, except the difference is that glass ceiling Ohio State was ahead in this rivalry and is currently behind.
What about this? I don't know. I think we may be talking in circles here.
Yeah,
this is quintessential. This is quintessential college football.
We wouldn't talk in circles.
This is quintessential college football. Emotion, basically screaming down the voice of logic in a conversation.
Yeah, no, and I
Ryan
agree.
Day would be hired at any school in the country right now.
Yes.
USC, LSU, Florida State, whatever, it doesn't matter. So the idea that his position is in jeopardy at arguably the best job you could get or one of the five best jobs that you can get because of two football games.
Well, it would be three.
That is the DNA of the insanity that runs through the spine of the sport.
I agree.
It's also insane to me that this game, and Richard, you can tell me if I'm wrong, might come down to an issue where Kyle McCord has just simply never he's never had a game like this because he's young relative to the amount of starts. Like, you can't say that fourth quarter Notre Dame was big. I think holding serve with Penn State was big. This is different. This is a whole different thing, right?
Different.
He is the lesser experienced of the two starting quarterbacks here. And this is going to be held against Day, I guess, even though C.J. Stroud is, exploding in the NFL right now. It's just it's a lot of bad timing. And then if you're Ryan Day and you win the game in any way, shape or form other than a complete and total domination, 56-0, which isn't going to happen. You have an asterisk next to this because the guy's not on the field and he's the guy who accounts that all the Michigan people I talk to are they credit Harbaugh with a tremendous amount of in-game adjustment and capital C coaching. Like we talk about some coaches who don't really have the in-game strategy strength meter too high in their profile, but Harbaugh is allegedly not one of them.
But stick a pin in that.
All right. Godfrey,
because the thing is, you can't sit here and tell me that Jim Harbaugh is an in-game coaching change savant, but then ignore the fact that Sharon Moore decided in the Penn State game about a quarter and hey, fellas, let's just run the fuck out of the ball. And then they ran the ball 30 straight times with two kneel downs in the end and won the game.
Yes.
So
that's very fair. And we could see a result, or I think we could see a game narrative that makes all this moot. And it is just grind, 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 grind.
There is definitely a 17-13 in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, absolutely. 100%. Some of it, frankly, has to do with the fact that the quarterbacks are... I think about J.J. McCarthy, which is I don't think he's a superstar, but he's better than Kyle McCord, all right? I think he's better than Kyle McCord.
Yeah.
But that nature of it, you may end up with two teams that realize that the throw game ain't really working. And I expect that to happen more to Michigan than I expect to happen to Ohio State, because spoiler alert, Michigan doesn't have number 18 and Ohio State does. I think that if Michigan has to get into a throw game against Ohio State, I don't think they win, because I think we have seen that Michigan's passing game is limited. It just is. They're not using it.
Yeah.
They haven't needed it, to be fair, but they're not using it. I think there's a struggle in pass protection, even though they're getting Ladarius Henderson back. I think there is I don't think their receivers are as good as Ohio State's receiving core, obviously. And that's beyond just Marvin Harrison.
But the other problem I have with that, Richard, is that have we seen any comp, anything that could proxy Ohio State shutting down a run game like Michigan's?
Yeah.
And
the Penn State game.
Would you put Penn State on par? I don't know.
Defensive front.
Terrible. Yeah. Well, no. I'm talking about, you're talking about Penn State's offense being comped to Michigan's offense. Is that what I'm hearing?
In the run game. It's close. It's as close as you're going to get. What, you want fucking Minnesota? Like,
that's,
you know,
my point. No, no, right, that, right, again, right. That's my point, is that we're going into uncharted water. And the reason I threw Michigan or threw Penn State out, really, in both regards, is that that's a dimensionless offense. That's a harangued offense. There is no pass game apparent. And so the run game is going to operate differently, and you're going to prioritize it differently.
But I will also say, Notre Dame's run game, about as good as it gets,
yeah,
and was not
that,
able to.
That might be the closest thing that we can get.
Yeah. You know,
Then I go back, but then again, layman casual approach here is, I go back to Jim Knowles was hired. Jim Knowles exists at Ohio State for one reason, and that's because they, in the first win, they gutted Ohio State running the football. So they get rid of Kerry Combs, they bring in Jim Knowles, and then we saw the same thing happen. I guess, yeah. It's like, how much confidence, where's the trajectory of your front seven's improvement relative to those two losses? As we enter on, you know, November 21st, how much better are you as a front seven?
The area of this game that I think might be structurally different than the last few, even more than what you're talking about, Godfrey, because I do think that Ohio State's defense has changed, is that 2 years ago.
I do too. I just don't know how much.
2 years ago in particular, which that game was a little bit more Michigan just runs over them than 2022 mm-hmm. was. Michigan threw it a little bit more, threw it around a little bit more in Columbus last year. But the part,
they closed Michigan it out. Michigan did whatever the fuck they wanted
the part
to.
Of
they
that,
closed it out last year on the ground.
Yes.
They
did.
The part of the 2021 game that I think gets forgotten, because we all talk about, you know, the seven rushing touchdowns, or maybe it was six, the complete inability to stop anything, the domination by Michigan's offensive line, was that also Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo just kind of ruined that game for CJ Stroud.
That
and
is
for
true.
Ohio
yeah,
State.
That is true.
Like, Michigan just had the edges against overmatched tackles for Ohio State that created, on that side of the ball, enormous problems for the Buckeyes. And Richard, yes. What I am wondering about, you just mentioned that Michigan's going to get an injured tackle back or back-ish in this game. But it's been pretty apparent in a couple of recent games, even Maryland, but most notably Chop Robinson at the beginning of the Penn State game, that Michigan's tackles, and this was notable against Purdue, it's been like one of the kind of little nitpicks all year. Michigan's offensive tackles are not, I'm not going to say they're turnstiles, but they're not as strong as they are with those three guys in the middle who just road grade. And Ohio State can get after you. And
you better not get like, in a drop back passing game. That's
yeah, JT legacy
about.
Game. Another one.
You better not get in a drop back passing game. And there is a very closely held reality where I don't think that has to happen. Right. Again, there is a 17-13 finish to this game very close at hand. They're just
you
is.
Guys are talking me into this Ohio State potential here, which
I'm picking Ohio
not.
State. I'm picking. Ohio
it could
State.
Go either way.
It's,
it could go either way.
I'm picking Ohio State to cover. I'm picking Ohio State to win outright.
Why?
The a lot of what I just said.
No, I know, like, but give me like I mean I'm
this. You can't for me. I can't ignore how I think Ohio State is peaking right now. And okay. Michigan is sort of being exposed right now. Not being exposed is lesser than significantly, but
okay.
There is a lack of killer instinct. There has been a lack of killer instinct in the last 2 weeks, last week especially. The Penn State game is a little bit of a different deal because, again, Penn State's offense. It's just like, I don't want to throw that out because Penn State's defense did the business, Michigan's defense did the business, because we know Michigan's defense is a top three unit right now in the sport. I'm not concerned about that. But
right.
I worry about what happens when Michigan has an arm tied behind its back on offense. Maybe Ohio State isn't able to tie that arm behind their back. But if they are, I believe that Ohio State's counterpunch or second punch or secondary
right.
gives them more avenues to win than Michigan's with Michigan's offense. Because, folks, Travion Henderson is that dude. Travion Henderson, him. Travion Henderson, in my opinion, is the best running back in this game.
Does your sort of series of statements there, is that a sort of backwards endorsement of had Penn State been able to counter some of their effective defensive efforts, some of their three and outs, some of the spots where they had defensive authority in that game against Michigan, had they been able to counter with a scoring drive or even a more sustained drive and put a little bit more points on the board, their offense had not been total shit, that you think Michigan would not have been able to do what they did?
Michigan managed that game because they weren't forced to do anything else.
That's what I'm getting at. They were never made uncomfortable.
Never. Ever. Ohio, there is also an edgewise thing with Ohio State that worries me. And we've mentioned this a couple times and it showed up last year. There has been a weird thing with Ohio State special teams over the last kind of year and change where the punt, like they've faked. You remember last year when this happened? They like faked one and like half the punt unit knew the fake was on. The other half didn't. And it was weird deal.
Ohio State's had this like four times in the last couple of years. It's
that's what
weird.
I'm saying.
Several times this happened against Rutgers, Maryland. That
would concern me as far as, look, it's going to be a close game. It's going to be a possession battle probably. And like something like that happening, an inefficiency there where you just have an operational inefficiency in a very key phase of the game. Like Michigan blocked a punt last week. Like if it's a special teams thing where Michigan's able to steal a possession because of that, that's where we get into it's an effective way Michigan can manage the game. This is for Ohio State, you got to strap it up and bring the lunch pail because I think you have to earn Ohio State. You have to earn the right to make JJ McCarthy be a real quarterback in this game. You have to earn the right to get Michigan out of its game management shell. They may not be able to. I want to be clear about that. They may not be able to. But that's if I'm Michigan, it's run it till you stop it because you ain't done it in 2 years. And Penn State wasn't able to do it 2 weeks ago.
Do you worry about Michigan's ability to get a serious Blake Corum game given that Ohio State is still like, I asked this to make sure we don't over rotate. Like Ohio State has kind of been vulnerable at points, defensive front wise and offensive front wise for that matter. But like Michigan is still seeing a defensive front that it's only seen once against Penn State. Maybe those units are comparable. Like, I don't know. I might worry a little bit if I'm Michigan, that I'm just not going to be able to do what you're describing. Like I understand that Ohio State's been sort of gotten a few, but like Michigan may not be able to run the ball 42 times in a row in this game.
No, that's what I mean. Like Ohio State, you have to get them out of that. That's what they want to do. That's what they have been able to execute against pretty much everybody. Especially Penn State, the comp. You have to get them out of that. You have to render that moot. You have to get them off the field on some third downs. When it's third and two, you have to be able to stop them.
So, in other words, how about this? Hypotheticals. If we're seeing more than three or more third and six plus on Michigan offensive drives early on, you feel like you're trending in a good direction for Ohio State?
Yes, but because it depends on, because remember in the Penn State game, they weren't worried at all about Penn State being able to score coming back. So they would run. And that happened last week. It's Maryland too. They were running in sort of those third and mediums because they just didn't respect.
That's why I said offense. First half. Assuming we have a tight score, not just grinding out clock and not worrying about it.
I'm very interested in Ryan Day's game management here. Because we talked about in the hurry up after the Penn State Ohio State game or Penn State Michigan game, where I thought James Franklin and Penn State should have been more aggressive earlier on fourth downs and pressing the gas there. They got down to the goal line, kicked a field goal on like the 5 yard line. I didn't love that. I am very interested in if Ryan Day is really from the outset here going to press an issue, force an issue, and sort of tell everybody we're sort of pressing the gas here on fourth down, 2-point conversion, yada yada, trying to maximize our possessions.
I mean,
here,
they're not in a situation where they've been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, have they trailed?
Michigan? Has Michigan trailed? I don't think so.
I mean, you have substantial 30 point range blowouts all the way through mid October into, I mean, yeah, they vaporize literally everyone until you get to the Penn State game. That's their closest game.
Right. And then last week was also close, but it's
I had one Michigan fan talk about last week and sort of like a, there's some brain farts in there, or maybe that's just squirrely devil magic, or that's Loxley kind of scheming it up or whatever. But I don't know. I don't draw a conclusion from that. I just listen.
I mean, Ohio State.
I did like Maryland saying, "Hey, like fuck it, we're throwing grenades the entire time because that's the only possible way we can get out of the situation." I
like Ryan Day in a one. I've said this before. I like Ryan Day in a one game gotta have it spot, though he has not had it or he has not gotten it in the last 2 years.
I do. I like him in that such spot because I really do feel like, considering everything with Georgia, like it's pretty impressive what they did against Georgia.
I want to mention Travion Henderson in a little bit more detail. Richard, I agree with you. He's very good, but I think he is kind of a key to a question about this game. There have been a couple games this year, two in particular, where Ohio State really has not been able to run the ball. Maryland, which was outright perplexing, but Maryland stoned them all afternoon. And also the Penn State game. In that game, Ohio State got Marvin Harrison Jr. offense, but that was it. They couldn't run the ball. Travion Henderson conspicuously not playing in those games. He missed three games in the middle of the season. Those were two of the three, were the Maryland games and the Ohio State game. I think we might be about to get a decent sense of exactly how important a great running back can be at the elite tier of college football. And we've gotten plenty of lessons in this. But like, we're going to see
it against Wisconsin, Alex.
Yeah. He has had three booming games in his four games since back, Wisconsin, Rutgers, and Minnesota. If Ohio State runs the ball in this game at a, let's say, 4 yard a clip or better, I'm going to look at that and be like, all right, Travion Henderson was the reason for that, because these guys couldn't run block against the Maryland Terrapins. And Michigan
like Travion Henderson turns 3 yard runs into 9 yard runs. Travion Henderson turns that, and that's not even counting the top end explosive play ability that Ohio State needs to be able to find explosive plays that aren't Marvin Harrison Jr. We haven't even talked about Emeka Buka, who seems to be fully healthy and playing really well. They found some different ways to get him the ball on Saturday. He, I believe, scored on a tap pass, or at least had a big gain on a tap pass against Minnesota last week. So it's Ohio State finds explosives in different ways. I think Ohio State has multiple ways to find explosive plays, where I think Michigan can really only get them in the run game. And I think with Travion Henderson, his ability to turn short gains into mediums, which is not even getting at his top end, take 150 yards to the house, gives them something, because I think Travion Henderson is playing better football than he has in the last couple of years.
He's important. Anyone have anything else on this game before we put on our seatbelts and get ready?
Because I am. And like, I use the SED audience a lot in terms of shaping narrative for the filthy casuals out there. Are we buying Day's profile, taking some sort of asterisk if Ohio State wins this game because it wasn't Harbaugh?
Among who?
No.
Among the casuals. Among the again.
I think so. Godfrey, I know what you're saying. Casuals need to understand Sherrone Moore is very, very good at what he does.
And I don't think Ohio State fans will be down on him. Like, Michigan fans might just, in typical rivalry shit talk, be like, oh, you didn't get us with our guy. But Ohio State fans,
should we also just maybe point out the fact this might not be the last time they see each other this year?
Actually, this is a great point. Well, you bring me to a great point. This is maybe the last most important Ohio State-Michigan regular season game ever, because how many times, if you were to reverse engineer this and go back, in the last 20 years would the loser of Ohio State, Michigan not have remained in a 12-team playoff had one been in effect? A few, usually in the years when Michigan was bad.
Yeah.
But
I also think you're discounting like how the Big Ten is going to change because of what's coming in. Like you just don't know how to factor in Oregon and Washington, like how they're going to factor into a 12-team playoff world, how they're going to factor into the Big Ten race. Like it's the thing where the ACC added Miami and put Miami on one side of the league so that we could get Florida State and Miami in the ACC championship game every single year. Guess what? Never happened.
No, you know? I agree with you, but I think that it is notable. And I do know, by the way, full well that Ohio State got in last year anyway, despite losing. But there will be many years in the future where someone loses this game and still has a national title shot. There will be many, many years of that. Sure. And yeah. I don't think it
cheapens
things.
But that happened last year.
I don't think that it doesn't cheapen it very much. Trust me, everyone's still going to watch. Everyone's still going to care. But I can look into this and think it's cool that one of these teams is going to be eliminated after this game.
There is a weird, it's like college football version of like trad Catholicism becoming popular. This idea of like sports writers being like the BCS was right. Do you remember like this is a thing now buried in the dumber regions of our colleagues' brain? They're like,
fucking two teams. Well, if you hear that and you're like, what is he talking about? It's if you go back, the BCS has picked exactly the top seven or something the last like few years. In just a funny sort of way.
This is why I maintain.
Also, the playoff committee, by the way, I know what people think. The playoff committee doesn't all the way go in there and fucking wing it. They use computers too. And computers, BCS. So.
Two things. I would be totally in favor of the BCS coming back as a seeding system for the next playoff format. And two, this is why I maintain that the 2014 season, the Sugar Bowl between Alabama and Ohio State, was maybe one of the most important games in college football history. Because it justified the existence of a postseason structure for the first time. And there were a lot of people in powerful places in the sport talking about how this was going to ruin the sport. And they had the ears of dumb people like Kirk Herbstreit, like people who like ape for the Rose Bowl and stuff. Like Rose Bowl people were putting it out like, this is ruining everything. This is going to fundamentally ruin college football. And now here we are about to expand again. And everyone who has a fucking functioning brain is excited about the expansion to 12. Even though Georgia's going to beat everybody.
I'm looking forward to the expansion. However, we'll talk about it another time. I think that the Rose Bowl people.
Wait, what?
The Rose Bowl people, insufferable as they are.
Should be rounded up into a camp.
Have a little bit of a point.
That's another podcast for
Another podcast for another day, Steven.
I don't understand how they get Yankees and Midwesterners. I don't understand what Rose Bowl is.
I'm an Angeleno now, Steven. I mean, as you know, I've lived in Los Angeles for like 3 months. I'm basically lifelong there.
Wow, what a novel concept. A Northeasterner moved out to LA and claimed Los Angeles after 6 months.
True. I got to tell you, you can get great tacos out there, Steven. And people barely even drink. Get it.
Richard, help me.
Last note on this, by the way, I wrote something this week.
I'm sorry. He had a staff meeting. He did immediately come up to us, and you were like bragging on the gyms. And I remember where I was when you like your first 2 weeks in LA. You were like talking about this badass gym that you went to, and I was like, "Wow, that was fast."
Look,
Alex went LA quickly.
I'm just trying to embrace the culture. But I'm podcasting from Pittsburgh today, so it totally doesn't count. I do think that an interesting thing that is happening right now in Godfrey world, which is narrative world, character driven outside of the field of play this week, is the way that Jim Harbaugh's
Stephen failed math world.
Yeah. The way that Jim Harbaugh's absence and fight with the Big Ten has, instead of weakening him at Michigan, made him into a very godlike figure. I just find an interesting connection between the stuff that Godfrey talks about on this show so often about Michigan's self-image and the way that it sees itself and the way that Jim Harbaugh has gotten Michigan people to rally to his side so furiously over the last few weeks. I think those two things are related. I think that one of the things that the Big Ten commissioner, Tony Petitti, got right is that Jim Harbaugh really has become the embodiment of everything about Michigan football. And I think he's done it because if Michigan fans were to see Jim Harbaugh,
Colts need leaders,
as anything other than a guy doing it the right way, then that would raise some questions about Michigan as a place that does it the right way. And I think the same applied to Michigan fans and Jim Harbaugh's treatment of Bo Schembechler. And there's all kinds of other things there
that I think is worth talking about. Pause. First, plug your piece.
Oh, it's at The Ringer. Go to theringer.com. It's at the top of the page right now.
Second, the former statement that you made, not before the Schembechler part, you are saying that if it was anyone other than Harbaugh, there might be a stronger cultural referendum on Michigan doing stuff, quote unquote, the wrong way. Or you're saying that because it's Harbaugh, it's easier to rally to a patron saint.
I think what I'm saying is that if it was any other top 10, top 15 blue blood program, it wouldn't be quite like this in the way that the fan base has come to rally to the coach's side. And I know that that's going to strike you in a certain way. I think that there has been.
What is it? What do you mean when you? What is the, what work is this doing in the sentence?
Good point. No, the solitary this. My 10th grade English teacher would tell me you can't use the solitary this because you're not showing your work. This in this case, like this, means the fan base wide rallying behind the character of the head coach in not just a legal sparring, but like a rhetorical.
I feel like you guys are too young. I feel like you guys are too young to remember the old SEC, because this is part and parcel the old SEC.
Well, hold on a second, because my thing is teams and school cultures embody the id of their head coach when they are good. Every single Georgia fan right now that you talk to can regurgitate all of Kirby's isms.
You're either a leader or you ain't. Absolutely.
And he says them.
Yeah.
You're talking to somebody who grew up on 1990s Florida. Like, you know, you embody the id of your head coach when you are good. And the id of Michigan's head coach happens to be the id of Michigan's also epic winning head coach.
That's it right there. Jim Harbaugh's id is Michigan's love language. And he has so thoroughly enmeshed himself into Michigan-osity that he has become the University of Michigan in these last couple weeks.
He's like, more machine than man.
He's
probably always been more Michigan than man, if we're going to be honest.
That's how I see it. I like to think that I make the argument better.
That was an excellent use of a Star Wars. It scared me how on point that one just was. So
also, the lawyer thing matters, because Michigan, this is a fan base that is given to the art of rhetorical sparring on the internet.
Have we had any statement from Tom Mars about how his firm copied and pasted off of
appears to have lifted very directly from an MGo blog post.
Tom, where are you? Dude, Tom, you were in my... Hey, Tom. Can I get an emoji? Is it going to work? Tom, do you read my DMs all the time last year? Where are you, bud?
The emoji didn't work.
So I know. Tom, DM me back. Come on the show, Tom. Seriously, I'm dead serious.
That's a lot.
He jumped in my DMs last year. No, he jumped in my DMs because they were public last year about, you and I have more in common than you think, and da 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 da, and I'm actually working for the things you want in college football. And I was like, fuck it. One, show your fucking work. And two, let's have a public conversation. I'd love to ask you some questions, Tom. And you don't have to hide behind ongoing lawsuits, because I have questions about ones that you've closed. Like that kid at Texas A&M in Arizona. What happened in Mexico? Tom, where are you at? Come on, buddy. Come on the show. I'm not afraid of litigation.
He's not. Alex trust is. Me. No, yeah, he's not. Alex no, is. See, I know you're not. That's Ohio State, Michigan. A lot of on-field, a lot of off-field. I'm interested in where this goes, as is everyone else cares about college football. By the way, if you are a Substack subscriber, we are going to be in a live chat that we will open up on Saturday. We'll be chatting, we'll be talking, we'll be watching the game together. Be a lot of fun, and a place to do it other than Twitter, which is now called X and is dying. That was the kickoff to the big rivalry week tasting menu. But this is a week to be maximalist, so we're going to go through quite a lot of games this week. Probably, well, definitely not in quite as much detail as the game of the week, but in a lot of detail nonetheless. Thanksgiving night, Thursday, it's the Egg Bowl. One thing that caught my eye about this, Stephen, is that I had seen Ole Miss fans in various corners of the internet for weeks being concerned that ESPN's Thursday night crew with Dan Mullen on it would be calling this game. It appears that they can breathe easy, because it looks that is not the crew. So Ole Miss fans will not have to hear Dan Mullen call a game.
No, it's the A team, isn't it? It's like Rogers, Hart, and our buddy Cole, right?
I believe that is the crew that's taking the game. Yes.
Yeah. It's also I mute. I've said this before, but I mute about 90% of football games, and I love that play by play crew. I like genuinely like, and not because I know some of them. It's just because they do an exceptional job. So ESPN PR, if you want to clip this, the best college play by play crew, soup to nuts, from like play call to analysis to actual legitimate good quality on field reporting, which is totally possible if you're not a lazy ass, is that crew. They're awesome.
Or Carissa Thompson.
I would have thought Mullen calling the Egg Bowl would have been fucking hilarious. Why? I don't understand why my alma mater had like got their power.
I don't know if the school did. I just know that the fan base did.
I don't get it.
I can only see what I can see.
Because the game's in Starkville. So
what do you mean you don't get it? Okay. What do you mean you don't get it? Yeah, Steven, I know you get it.
Didn't you do a bit of journalism? Because, like, didn't you do a bit of journalism in your day about how Dan Mullen
because they would enjoy
out Ole Miss to the NCAA? Maybe
they
you.
They would enjoy, like, that makes me feel sad for them because their troll game should be better. There's a way to make Dan Mullen call an Ole Miss victory if you have the right attitude. It's dumb. Also, okay. It would have been funny, like, by the way, I'd love to talk to Dan Mullen about the Egg Bowl. I got a lot of questions. ESPN PR. Hi. Man, I'm trying to use my podcast. Hey,
Mullen's been pretty good on television this year. He's been pretty.
I have a lot of questions for Dan.
He's been pretty good.
I just want to have a conversation. Why is everybody afraid to talk to me? Friday, why ESPN never return my phone calls?
Friday afternoon.
Oh, hang on. Hang on real fast. There's actually something to talk about here.
Oh.
This game is going to be way closer than everyone thinks. Okay?
It's the Egg Bowl. Like,
but I'm talking about, like, I might favor State for a lot of completely non-football reasons.
Hell yeah.
They won this game last year. They won this game last year because Lane was wildly distracted. They were neck deep in the Auburn drama. Ended up being the last victory of the last game of Leach's career and life. If you saw any of that ULM game last week with Ole Miss, like, Georgia beat the fucking effort out of them. So there are legitimate offensive line concerns going into this game, which will be super interesting. If Ole Miss draws Iowa in the bowl game, I can't wait to talk about that. Greg Knox is on a second interim head coaching stint with Mississippi State.
Why.
Big morale energy there. Did you guys see that he rode an ATV into the locker room?
By the way, that was not a shot at Greg Knox, to be perfectly clear.
Yeah, no, I think everyone got you. Last year, same defensive staff, roughly, even though they have fired Zach, but the DC, Matt Brock, was involved in the game planning last year and will be doing it again this year. Remember that name because they shut down Ole Miss's offense. They kept him to 331 yards last year total, which is about half of what they were averaging in most games. They were under 100 yards rushing. If they can't do that quick, I don't even know what we technically call it, Richard, but they'll rush to the line in tempo, and then he'll, like, they do a lot of these, like, dropbacks or shotguns, and then it just ends up being like a handoff toss. It's like a quick read, basically, of the front. And then he just options to run like an ISO. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but you see it a lot when they're going fast. State snuffed that out last year. That's why they ended up coming back and winning the game. This is going to be really close and weird.
Okay. I'll take your word for it that it'll be weird. I have
just
no doubt about that.
Just watch that instead of like sure San Francisco is going to beat the shit out of Seattle. Like,
yeah. Friday like afternoon, Iowa and Nebraska. Richard, you were in Nebraska like weeks after Matt Rhule took this job. We talked about it at the time, did a good story for Sports Illustrated about the groundwork that he was laying. What is the level of criticalness that they pull an upset here and do not finish 0-3 to miss a bowl?
I think they should pull an upset here. Not in a sense of like, are going to. Like, I think there's a vibe. There's a very significant vibes factor that changes when you upset Iowa, who's headed to the Big Ten championship game. I believe it's at home for Nebraska, and go out on sort of a high and you build. I know obviously Nebraska's had significant quarterback issues among many other things on offense. The total for this game is 26.5.
And it's 0.5. These totals always go under. When these Iowa totals are low, like, they go under. It's not advice.
The closest they got was a couple, like 2 weeks ago. They like kneeled it when they could have gone in and it's
who's it's the best quarterback in this game? Is it Deacon Hill? Is it whichever of the three Nebraska quarterbacks?
whatever. Yeah.
It's, I don't want to get mean. I don't want to get mean.
Why?
Not to get
it's
mean.
Not mean. But it's just an evaluation. Analysis.
I mean, it's is it insert Nebraska quarterback here? It's an interesting. It's not really interesting, but it's a question. Toledo at Central Michigan. Toledo has worked its way into the playoff rankings. This is worth following, I think, as a fringy New Year's Six thing. There are currently four different G5 leagues that have teams ranked between like Tulane at like 18 or 20, and I think 24, 25. I think every group of five league right now, except for the Mountain West, has a team ranked in the AP poll, and we'll see where the playoff rankings go after we come out with the show. But Toledo has one loss and it looks like what it should look like in the MAC. And it is, I think, in play now, in play if things get weird, to be the New Year's Six representative for the group of five. Also, they have totally flipped the thing that was killing them a few years ago when they could not win a close game for the life of them.
Yeah.
They're 5-1 in one score games.
Yeah, that was always the annual preview thing that we would do when I would do MAC gossip, was like, they don't win close games. Imagine if they won close games. Now you actually have that season as like a data point. They win
when
close
I say
games.
Y'all are being weird, I don't mean you two and I don't mean the listening audience. I mean like ADs with open jobs or soon to be open jobs. Y'all are being weird about this Jason Candle thing, man. 10 games in a row.
Which direction?
The only loss being Illinois, Jason Candle not getting a ton of burn in the cycle.
Dude.
We'll talk about it on the Substack show.
Yeah, we'll talk about it on the report. Substack show, but I raised this warning flag about the MAC and like luster and appeal and resume, like it's a we'll talk about it on the Substack. It's a problem. But they like it's going to hurt every MAC job looking for a coach, too.
UTSA and Tulane. UTSA. How focused are we here?
Bro, he's got it.
How on the ball are we here?
Richard, like you're and Alex for that matter. We've all stuck recorders or phones in faces of coaches before.
It's an unanswerable question.
Dude,
and I know.
Cut down his media veil. Just cut down his media veil. I'm saying the one thing that every sports journalist shouldn't say, but like stop putting him in the line of fire.
Well, one of them was the post game, and then the other one was just his weekly. So he's gonna talk.
Yeah,
make that it. Like, call in sick to the coaches.
No,
well, you know, you're contractually.
Here's the
you
thing.
You can't win.
Here's the thing.
Viannini had this dead on. Chris had it dead on. This calendar fucking sucks, and it's because there's no governance in this sport. There's no reason, as a G5 stan, I'm saying this. There's no reason that UTSA's head coach should not be denied an opportunity to explore a job with Texas A&M. It fucking sucks that he has a regular season game and potentially a conference championship. Like that, this is a bad time of year for this shit to happen.
I agree. I think everyone agrees with that. But two things. One, he can answer the question however he likes. He's chosen to answer it in a very, very silly way, which is just
there's
like...
There's no good way to answer the question.
There's no good... Alex, how do you answer it? Tell me how to answer it, Alex.
There's no
good way to answer the question.
Personally, what I would say, though this is easy for me to say sitting here, is, you know, I'm not going to talk about specific opportunities. I absolutely do look into things that might be best for my family, but my focus
no,
is on the
game. No, he's not. He's never going to answer that question.
Okay, cool.
Like, nope.
But you asked
that,
him.
And by the way, that is adjacent to his answer already.
No, I agree. Now, here's the thing.
But it's not. It is not realistic, actually realistic, to expect him to answer the question. Like, you can want clear communication as an observer of the sport or a fan of UTSA or a fan of Texas A&M, but it is not realistic for the dozens of reasons that you know as a critical thinker why he's
by
not
the way you know what's funny do you know what's even funnier, the coach on the opposite end of this is being mentioned for like way more jobs right now and like probably won't be there
and
next
could
year,
be the head coach
of
Georgia Tech
about
right
that.
Let's talk about this though. I think the reason, Godfrey, I'll admit it, I'm wrong on this, fine, you're right, there's no realistic answer you can give that's good. You're wrong that they should cancel media availability and stop talking about the game, because this is maybe the biggest game in the history of UTSA football. This is a chance for them to go to the conference championship game, to stay unbeaten in league play in their first year in their shiny new digs conference. They are playing the defending Cotton Bowl champions. They have a great chance to win this game on the road. Tulane is an interesting story as well, because Tulane has been something much more sluggish than it was last year. I've talked about this. I have heard from someone who is directly aware of this, that Tulane has been holding something back, like being a little bit conservative with injured players, perhaps that I know perhaps it was alluded to maybe being a little bit schematically vanilla as they go through a kind of easy back half of the slate coming into this game and a potential conference championship. Time to see it. Time to see what you got. And for UTSA, it looks like they're peaking at the right time. Frank Harris looks very, very Frank Harris-y after not looking Frank Harris-y in the first half of the year. So I'm excited about the game, and you can't have UTSA stop talking about it or putting their coach in front of the newspapers in San Antonio because they want to have local excitement for this game. It's a big game. What you want
to
have?
What is a media veil going to do to build? Like I know. I'm going counter, and I know like I'm going to, dude. I know so many beat writers that listen to this who are I stump for beat writers. I fight for you guys.
He's not doing like a lot of media availabilities. It was his post game and his Monday.
I was just saying, like, yeah, then get the fuck out of there afterwards. That's what they do. Don't let it linger. Don't let it linger.
But also, and like, I guess there UTSA is a way. There's like that. They can't crack down on media. Like, it's UTSA.
There's
they
a James Franklin. There's nothing to crack down on. I mean, as someone just even getting ready, like previews ready for this show, when I go and check in on beats, like for some of the schools that we'll talk about in a second, it's crazy how little beat coverage we have left in like just because of the state of the media, not the state of college football. I would I'll amend it a little bit. Maybe he just does the James Franklin bully pulpit thing where like someone's just like, hey, have you had any contact with Texas A&M? And your answer is whatever you want it to be that's not related to the question. Franklin did that during like the sexual assault scandal at Vanderbilt. He's done it multiple times where he'll literally just be like, I'm so excited for this program and its history and da-da-da. Like everything Alex just said about the monumental aspect of this game. Like in other words, someone asks you about A&M and you immediately start talking about like Tulane secondary. Like Franklin will do that while he's staring at you and like not blinking, like trying to bully you out.
Yeah, dude.
I guess he could do honestly, that. I just think it's the whole system's fucked
honestly,
up.
Honestly, what he should do, here's what would be a good answer. Someone would say, have you interviewed for any other jobs? And he would say, you know what? I've been thinking about it. And you're interviewing me right now about the toughest job of all, which is dealing with Tulane's run game. I mean, just say it that way. Just be funny.
I mean, churlish like that. Yeah, I mean, like, you could be churlish like that. It's also funny because I was having a discussion with someone who used to work as an SID and encountered this situation with a still very famous coach who was being put on the spot by a TV crew before, like, he ended up leaving for another job. I don't know how much I'm at liberty to say. That's why I'm pulling the proper names out of this. And, like, they usually clear this shit with ESPN or CBS beforehand. Like, you're not going to ask him about that. Like, and they ended up doing it anyway, and it put him in a really bad spot.
Poor guy. I feel awful.
Trailer. No, I don't think Trailer's a bad dude. Like, I don't like.
I wasn't making that
kind of
assessment at all.
I'm just saying, like, yeah. I understand why you would want to go to Texas A&M. You're a fucking Texas high school coach. Like, I get it.
Nobody. Time out. Nobody. Let's move on from this. But nobody's saying that he can't interview for the A&M job. Of course he can.
No, but that's what sentiment, that like that's the sentiment.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Well, but that's what the money's that, for. That's why, you, I mean, it's
no,
why,
but
you
it's not.
For.
Like, it, but it's, I know I feel like it's sympathy for the devil, at least in my stance here. It's just, it's not, there's no good play for this. And like, when it happens and it's a double dealing prick or it's Todd Graham has family in Arizona meme, like, for those of you who don't remember, Todd Graham basically switched jobs like a fucking turnstile every year for a while.
I do remember
Tulsa, Pitt, Arizona State. Anyway, there's a better way to do this. I don't know what it is yet, but it's just another example of the fact we don't have oversight in this sport.
Air Force, get out of here. Boise, also on Black Friday. A lot of air out of the balloon for Air Force, but there are still myriad Mountain West Championship implications somehow for all.
So a lot of air was out of the balloon for Air Force, continuing Alex's pun there. Because they were thought to be knocked out of contention for the, I mean, Army knocks them out of basically that G5 rep spot in a stunning loss. And really, Air Force beat itself. It really wasn't Army. I think they turned the ball over 6 times.
That's right.
They lost to UNLV last week. So you're like, oh man, now they've got a conference. Okay, that's it for the Air Force dream season. Then later that night, New Mexico upset Fresno, which nobody had. And so that puts Air Force back in the title game against UNLV if they beat Boise. And I think a couple other things happened. The thing to watch in this game is that Boise is, I can't remember the interim's name. We'll talk about it on the I show, Richard.
Danielson.
He's not completely Spencer, out of the running in terms of, yeah, like he's a candidate, we'll say. There's a lot of interim coach emotion, which is definitely a trope, but it's happening right now at Boise. The thing to watch is that when Boise has been successful this year, they run the ball really, really well. They put up 350 yards of rushing against Utah State. this game, when you look at Air Force's offense, might last an hour and 10 minutes.
We love that. Friday night. So, Richard, before the season, Brett Yormark was playing to a crowd, which he loves to do in Lubbock at some luncheon. And he was like, hey, coach, I'm going to be in Austin on Thanksgiving Friday. I'd love it, paraphrasing, but he basically said, please beat the Texas Longhorns. Is he actually going to be at this game? Is he welcome there?
Yeah, he's going to be at this game. Like, speaking to somebody with knowledge of Brett Yormark's movements this weekend. Yeah,
good for him.
It's going to be funny as hell. There are tech people who are saying like Texas is ducking them by canceling their. Okay. And I am very liberally using the word rivalry, but their rivalry.
No.
Come on. All right.
No, dude.
Let's be adults.
Sorry.
Here.
No.
Look, Michael Crabtree made a hell of a play.
You know what this sounds like? It sounds like Memphis fans. Memphis fans will do this to Tennessee, Arkansas, and Ole Miss, and they'll be like, why are you ducking us? Why are you hating your rival? And we're like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, this, yeah, no. No, I'm sorry.
Oregon State, Oregon. Richard, there's one more chance here for Oregon State to do something pretty funny on the Pac-12's way to its grave.
Lean back. You got to get the beaver teeth in the shot on YouTube.
Oregon State does have the chance to do the funniest thing possible here. I don't know that they will, but this is one of those things. Like, there's sometimes you get to rivalry week and you're like, oh, you know, it's zany, it's crazy, and then like the good teams are all favored by like 15 points. Which
Oregon State has won this game numerous times of late.
No, I you're literally getting me there. They're both favored by two scores here. One, Washington State looks like it's lost the plot in its tilt against headed to the Pac-12 championship game school. Oregon State does not look like it has lost the plot. Oregon State is a heavy underdog that, yeah, man, could get pretty crazy, pretty zany. And it did last year. And it is in Eugene. I am 99% sure.
Yes, it is.
Okay. It's in Eugene. This is a Civil War you can be excited about. And it's what a sentence that is.
What a bumper sticker that could be.
And it's like Captain America.
Friday night. The question I have with Oregon is, all right, you've steamrolled a lot of teams that are steamrollable. Is this team steamrollable, particularly up front? Don't think so.
I think Oregon State should pray for rain again, because I don't think there's any world where DJ can keep up in a friendly, in a nice climate. I just think that Oregon's going to score too many points. But you get another game.
I don't know if they're built to. Not to take anything away from DJ.
No, you can take away. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine. They need it to be mucky, and they need like another 22-20 game and hope it goes the other way this time. That's how
they
I
need turnovers.
It.
Let's be honest. I mean, yeah, they need turnovers.
Yeah. Indiana and Purdue. Indiana lost the old brass platoon to Michigan State in horrifying fashion last week, but can still recover the old oaken bucket, which would mean something to that fan base. Tom Allen was trying to rally the troops, talking about the importance of winning that game to an Indiana Hoosier football player. And I would agree. Indiana fans are fed up with this guy. And I may have to just continue to be fed up with this guy.
Maybe they
splitzonedoer.com.
Maybe they don't have to continue to be fed up with this guy. Texas A&M, LSU. Interim coach, Elijah Robinson. Wonder why. Against LSU. LSU's going to score a ton of points. A&M's defense is actually good, even though a little injured, but actually good. Fireworks, something that looks like 3 or 4 overtimes, decent entertainment.
Okay. You got me. Saturday, middle afternoon, San Jose State, UNLV. Implications. UNLV winning in, San Jose State still alive for the Mountain West.
Just check in on UNLV if you haven't watched them this year. If you have it, no fault. Totally understandable. Just check in on, like, watch some UNLV football. It's really fun.
Colorado and Utah. We know the deal with Colorado, which is... we know the deal with Colorado. Utah doesn't have a terrible amount of offense, but they're probably going to have enough here because they're probably just going to say, hey, we're going to run you guys over.
Yeah.
This was the game before the year that everyone kind of looked at with Colorado and just said, this is scary. This is going to be when the chickens come home to roost. And
it yeah, still is.
And it still is. Like,
Yeah, still is.
Still is.
I mean, Utah is beat to humiliate USC. And in super grand and very, very simplified terms, what is Colorado if not an attempt at a school like that? Like, they're, Utah is also like, everyone's like, oh, Utah's all banged up. Utah's fucking lives banged up. They don't even start the bar fight until they've cut off their own arm. Like, this is, it's another Utah season. I'm not saying anything disrespectful.
Yep. It's the Iron Bowl. So Hugh Freeze lost to New Mexico State. Richard, I'm going to just get up, maybe go to the kitchen for a minute or something like that.
No, it's not going to be long. It's Godfrey, not gonna be long.
I'm going to, I've got a thumbs up on my screen.
He's got an emoji
YouTube,
now too.
YouTube audience, fantastic. Congratulations. Godfrey, I'm handing the ball off to you. I'm getting out of the way. I'll be back.
It's not going to be long because it's all very simple.
Real quick, before you sort of take it, it was a very embarrassing loss last week. Uh-huh. It's year one. Okay.
Nah.
Like,
this is not the way. This is not the way the man presented himself to Auburn, nor is this the way Auburn has presented the man to the world after basically paying $30-odd million to come back to a Xeroxed, sort of faded out version of the guy they couldn't stand and paid over $20 million to leave in the first place. Which, by the way, people on Twitter are like, one, they think I'm a UCF fan, so it's like an extra level of funny.
Oh, that's
like
Auburn, really good.
Auburn Twitter thinks because I have my shout out Space Knights. That's an extra layer that I have not corrected anyone because I think it's hilarious. Let's just move a world away from the man himself, from the sleaziness and everything that I've encountered with him, my whole history with him, his entire body of work in terms of behavior as a human being. Everything from Briarcrest to Ole Miss to the Tuies, all of it. Let's move away from all that. He, as a football coach, has shown that he runs a really, really inconsistent football culture. There is this weird thing amongst really, really otherwise educated Auburn fans to discount or like completely ignore things that happen at Ole Miss, which is a program that's way, way closer to you than you realize, like way closer, as if Lane Kiffin didn't tell you that last year, that they don't really have a response to. It's almost like they just kind of jam their fingers in their ears. This is a guy who never ran a consistent culture. What I mean by that is he doesn't know how to flatten out the edges of emotion. And that's one of the things that Kirby Smart and Nick Saban and people who build dynasties do. Even Meyer at his peak in the cutthroat Florida locker room or at Ohio State, it doesn't matter. There is a way, true architects of dynasties, which is what you told us you were hiring, are able to manage the ups and downs and flatten it out so you achieve as much consistency as possible with 18 to 23-year-olds. So I'm not going to talk about his first year at Ole Miss because you guys keep telling me it's his first year at Auburn. I'm not going to talk about his second year at Ole Miss. I'm going to give you that much grace, okay? But here's what I'm going to talk about real fast. You hired him because he beat Nick Saban and he beat Alabama. That's essentially why you hired him. And because he was a cutthroat recruiter in a pre-NIL world, and now that playing field's been even too. Alex is going to mention that in a second. The year that he beat Alabama and sort of became Hugh Freeze, right? 2014. They lost the last three SEC games of the season after beating Alabama, but most people who aren't Ole Miss fans don't remember that. If you're an Arkansas fan, that year you remember an unranked Arkansas beat the same Ole Miss team who beat Nick Saban 30-0, and it wasn't because of injury. 30-0. The next year, do you know what you remember, casual Auburn fan? You remember Ole Miss beating Alabama. This is probably Hugh Freeze's best team of his entire career. Do you know what do you know what happened right after he beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa? They lost to Memphis. Do you know what happened the next year? They lost by Alabama in their third year. They almost had a hat trick. People forget this. They lost, I think it was like 4 or 5 points to Alabama in 2016. And this is the last season before all the NCAA starts.
The theory of the
then
case
they
is
beat, the then they beat Georgia, Richard. They beat the shit out of number 12 ranked Georgia. Do you know what they did? They lost their next three SEC games.
The theory
this
of your case is
what
this.
You hired.
The theory of your case is this.
Yes.
Is this Auburn or is this Ole Miss? And I say, is this Auburn? Capital A Auburn, or is this the Auburn that is closer to Ole Miss, is what you're saying? Because the retort
of their defense.
Yeah, the retort to that is we're Auburn. And it doesn't mean we're Alabama. But we are Auburn, which means we're not Ole Miss.
What does that mean anymore? And do you really think that in year two or year three, I mean, the immediate positioning in social media as, yes, I was rolling around like a hog and shit as this was happening, and Jerry Kill was absolutely humiliating the man. By the way, I don't care if you're in a first-year SEC roster.
You can't lose
Bud.
To New Mexico State. Yes, you cannot lose Bud. To New Mexico State. I
ask
I
Bud how bad an average above the median SEC roster should be comped to New Mexico fucking State.
Yes, everybody knows and acknowledges you cannot lose to New Mexico State.
Ask
no matter
all
how
those pro SEC fuckers in the media who are just constantly beating the drum of the same mainstream narrative. You guys tell me all the time it's the only football worth watching. Now you're turning around because your prayer circle buddy got his ass beat so bad he can't fucking walk straight that, well, you know, it is year one. Bitch, this school didn't have a conference 2 years ago. They hired a guy with a medical condition and he beat the fucking brakes off of your Messiah. So is it one or is it the other? If you want to talk about character, I'll put all that shit aside about Hugh Freeze from a personal level. The bottom line is you did not hire a consistent football coach. You hired a guy, and Alex, you can take the baton here, whose entire signature lies on the fact that he was able to recruit underneath the table in a world that doesn't exist anymore, does it, Alex?
No, it doesn't. And I think there is an interest. I know that there is a discussion happening at Auburn right now among Auburn people about how he is balancing short-termism and long-termism, and if he might be robbing Paul so that he has money later for Peter, if that makes sense. And if it's possible to be too long-term.
You had it backwards, but we'll,
no,
we'll
I had it backwards on purpose.
Okay.
Hugh has been pretty focused this year on the expectations game, similar to what we talked about with Billy Napier last year at Florida. Remember that, you know, before the Georgia game, for instance, he was talking about how bad Kirby's first year or two was at Athens, and then a reporter basically corrected him about how quickly Kirby Smart got to a national title game, and Hugh couldn't believe it. Yeah. He was like, "Are you sure?"
And he told him he was wrong. Yeah, he told him he was wrong.
So Hugh has been really trying to
like 5 seconds on Wikipedia, dude.
Aesthetically manage expectations this year, and at the same time, it's not that he's just been doing that. He has been recruiting. Auburn has been recruiting. Obviously, when he was recruiting at Ole Miss, it wasn't just him; it was Ole Miss money people being extremely helpful. Back then, that was frowned upon. Now it is not frowned upon. You can do that now. And Hugh is experienced in this. He is seasoned in working in environments where you do that. Auburn is going to sign some really serious guys in December, very soon. That's going to happen. They're going to have a substantial signing class that looks like an Auburn signing class more or less should look. But you've also seen this kind of back and forth about focus on the present, focus on the long term, I think manifest itself this season during the course of the year. He had talked about how hard it was to not be calling plays, but he just had so many responsibilities. The narrative from Auburn is that he's gotten more involved in the offense as the season has gone on, alongside Phil Montgomery, the offensive coordinator there. But the thing is that on the whole, I think Auburn's season this year has, especially on offense, it's been dreadful. And the New Mexico State thing tips it from okay, fine, to a kind of disappointing first season on the field, just given the way you lose to a program like New Mexico State. And you juxtapose the way that they've looked and how disastrous their quarterback situation is in year one with the end of last year when Carnell Williams had a terrible Brian Harsin roster and made chicken salad at the end of the year and had a few uplifting weeks at Auburn.
How bad was this roster?
It's not very
good. It's not very good, but
Vanderbilt beat Florida last year. Like, how bad was this? This Auburn roster is being made out to be like the last survivors in a post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland.
No.
Give me a fucking break. Cars did not recruit well, but like it doesn't match what you guys
said. It's not a good roster, but I think, and Richard, I would throw this to you, that Auburn could have been better this year. And does that matter that you weren't? It might matter that you weren't. I mean, we still need to see how a multi-year collective world recruiting sample works. We've talked about this in context of other programs like Texas Tech, which is doing above its weight class recruiting as it's having a bad season. But, you know, like Miami last year had a worse year one than it had to have under Mario Cristobal. Seemed like they were focused on the build, and also he just can't manage a game. Doesn't seem that it's helped them in year two, that
what
they were as bad
two?
As they were in year one. And at some point, you know, does wasting a year where Peyton Thorne and Robbie Ashford are your quarterbacks and where you lose to New Mexico State, does that set back the pretty deliberate building that he is doing in recruiting with the help of the Auburn family. And Auburn people are talking about that, and it's a reasonable question.
I'm not doubting his ability as a recruiter. No one is builder, but I feel like no one is listening to me.
Recruiting isn't. Is he going to
bring in? Is he going to bring in great recruiting classes? Yes, he did it already. I'm telling you, he already signed top 10 recruiting classes at another school in the league. I am telling you, he does not possess the ability to attain what you want, and what you want is to compete with Kirby, and what you want is to bring respect back to the Iron Bowl and some semblance of balance in the state. He does not possess the non-recruiting ability to do that. This is not an opinion. It's a fucking fact. Why is no one listening to this? Why must they there's such a weird culture in college football. When you make a bad hire and you know it early on, people will close ranks until they absolutely have to admit their wrongdoing for like 2 and 3 years. When I am right in 2025, when I am right, I want you to come back to me and tell me this, all of you.
Okay. Richard, care to preview the Iron Bowl in one sentence?
Yeah, not what's going to happen on the field. Not really.
Yeah, right. Right. We'll talk about what's interesting.
You guys are fascinated by this in a way that I am not. I ain't fascinated by what's happening on the field here. No, sir. Ain't watching this one. Arizona State. Arizona is good. Arizona is good. Arizona has to win this game, and Oregon has to lose the Civil War in order for Arizona to go to the Pac-12 championship game. How about that?
That's insane.
Arizona State has like a quarter of a functioning roster, and I don't mean from a skill position. I mean that like everybody's hurt. Territorial Cup, it's probably going to be.
Don't they have four offensive linemen? That's not a joke.
No, yeah. It's just everybody's hurt.
They have four actual scholarship offensive linemen that can play.
BYU, Oklahoma State. There are too many Big 12 tie-breaking scenarios on the table for me to even try to help you with those on this podcast. It wouldn't be helping. It would be hurting. But the basics, Oklahoma State, win at home against a not great BYU team, and you are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you should win, by the way. You should. BYU is limited. I mean, played okay against Oklahoma last week, but they are limited. Stephen Godfrey.
I would like to see... Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to jump the transition. I think BYU in late November is going to be a really hard conference game. It's going to be interesting how that schedules out in the new Big 12, just because I thought that like maybe Provo had a hand in the tone and the tenor of last week's game against Oklahoma. Just a thought. I think that you can build that to your advantage. The reason I point this out is that BYU fans will remember like they could never get quality opponents in November for years as an independent because they're not Notre Dame. Everyone's gobbed up with, you know, conference play. So they were literally playing like, it was like UMass and an FCS school at this time of year. And now they get to use Provo as an environment where it's cold and it's intimidating, kind of the way Salt Lake City works for Utah. It's just a thought.
Stephen Godfrey, the only rivalry in college football that has a rivalry nickname that is named specifically for the feeling that one of its podcasting fans has about everyone in college football. It's Georgia Southern and App State. Oh, deeper than hate.
Oh, you dork. I appreciate that. The complexion of this one has changed dramatically because last weekend, obviously, App pulled the big upset. App is splitzoneduo.com. We've talked about App in certain ways and expectations and reality of what's going on at App, but they pulled off a huge upset at the same time that Georgia Southern was losing to Old Dominion at home. That's three in a row, by the way. They are mirroring Georgia Southern is last year's conference play implosion. The defense is not good. Things have kind of fallen apart since they whipped on Georgia State at home. Davis Brin is a statistical giant, but largely inconsistent when it comes to winning football games in the second half. I'm trying to be nice. If you guys are tired of hearing the narrative about like, man, you know how Georgia Southern hired USC's head coach? That shit's going to stop. As if they lose this game. And right now I would pick App to win this game. They will like this game is in Boone. They're retiring Armonte Edwards jersey, by the way, which is a really big deal to App fans. If you don't know who that is, just
quarterback of their FCS championship teams and the Michigan upset. Yep.
Yes. if slash when Georgia Southern loses this game, the bloom is off the rose on, hey, we hired USC's head coach, because this will be 2 years in a row that they have made national waves and shown a lot of like uniqueness and, oh, we're grabbing national attention. They beat Nebraska last year. They are falling apart down the slate in conference play and losing to inferior teams. This is a championship standard at a program that won a lot of championships at the level before. They expect to be winning the Sun Belt. So we're going to talk about Georgia Southern in a whole new way if they lose this game.
James Madison and Coastal Carolina. Well, Coastal could, if they win this game, take JMU's spot in the Sun Belt championship game. So it's kind of an interesting thing going on here between a team that is ineligible and the team that is poised to take their place.
Yeah, Coastal has a chance to do the funniest thing possible.
Northwestern, Illinois, land of Lincoln Trophy. Rapid flip in program fortunes here. Did not think coming into this game at the beginning of the year, looking ahead to this game, that one team would have bowl eligibility secured and it would be Northwestern, and the other would be fighting for its life to extend its season, and that would be Illinois. But hey, college football, it can change rapidly, and this makes me think about both of these. This is a really viable game to both of these schools because life is about to get harder for both of them.
Vanderbilt at Tennessee. No.
Wisconsin.
No.
Minnesota. Axe game. How about that one?
It's a nice way to salvage the long go offense because Minnesota's defense has not been good these last couple games. I think they're on a 2 or 3 game schneid right now. Like, Scotty's not scored bad offense. My long go theory came true. There's offensive line issues. They're like heavily penalized. I was digging into some of their scores like the last like month and a half when things kind of fell apart for them and losing the Northwestern game. This is a way where Fickell can redeem a little bit going into the offseason. I don't know if I should say, they're having a crystal ballish year one down the stretch.
Apple Cup, as we mentioned, also extended. Much like Oregon and Oregon State.
Man, Wazoo's going
to... Richard, is there any reason to think that we could be in for some Wazoo weirdness here?
Man, dude, what's happened to Washington State the last couple of
years? Well, they did beat up on Colorado.
Sick.
Kind of.
I know.
They
I mean,
really lost the plot here. So it's... I don't know. Weather depending, I'm sure, if Washington's going to do what you expect Washington to do here.
Florida State, Florida, a game that might be a little bit more interesting, not in the good way, but because both teams' quarterbacks are not participating.
Yeah, dude, Florida's going to run the single wing in this game. And it's like less than 10 passes from the Gators in this game. Prove Florida State can stop it.
Short what about Florida State?
I think Florida State can run enough of a functional offense. Buddy, I think you could get back there and throw the ball to Keon Coleman. Fuck it, he down there somewhere and figure it out.
Oh, yeah,
thanks, man.
Secondary?
No,
Safeties?
I appreciate you. I appreciate you for saying that. Clemson and South Carolina. So I'm actually kind of interested in this one, and I shouldn't be because neither team is very good this year. But it seems like Clemson has they have stabilized things after the inexplicable 4 losses. I feel like the tenor of that going into the offseason could take an even more sharply negative turn if they did not win this game for the second year in a row.
It's a revenge game. I think they're going to be like, I'm not even joking. Like he's super pissed about last year. So
yeah, dude,
they're going to be locked in.
This is a remind them who you are game.
They were smarting after getting upset last year. I think they'll come in and why? They'll come in and just bring the fucking wood on this one. Actually.
Balloons also, for like, the YouTube it's audience.
Like South Carolina's, I mean, not good.
No, they did not. They are not. YouTube audience, congratulations. You're seeing things float across Steven's and my screens today because Apple is a special company. Georgia and Georgia Tech, obviously not going to preview this game, but I do demand that everyone pick the exact next year of a Georgia Tech victory in this series. The last was in 2016, Kirby Smart's first year. Go.
When's the heat death of the sun?
Yeah, that's why I wrote 20XX.
See, you guys are no fun. You're not playing my game. I'm saying 2036. I think that Kirby's last year at Georgia is 2035. That'll be 20 years in the job. Pretty long run. He'll be about 59. Might want to go try the NFL. Go be by the lake at that point. Saban tried the NFL when he was about 54. So give me 2036, the first year under Coach Jake Fromm for the Bulldogs. They will lose to Georgia Tech that year. Got a lot of good answers when I asked Twitter about this from the Splits Undo account. Some people have pointed out that it might literally be never because Georgia could kill the series because the SEC is going to go to more conference games and they're going to have to be more selective about non-con. Or Super Leagues could disrupt this thing and prevent Georgia Tech from getting to play Georgia going forward. So the answer could be never, but I'm saying 2036 under Coach Fromm.
Sure.
Love it. North Carolina.
I seem really interested in this.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you about that one. This is an Atlanta year where it all looks red?
That's correct.
Oh, yeah.
There actually is. They don't love that. Who doesn't love that?
Shorter drive from Sandy Springs.
Who doesn't love that?
Georgia Tech.
Right. That's the thing. I think that Georgia finds some value in this because it's just fun to red out the other team's stadium. And also, this is me imagining, not knowing, but you can correct me. I think that they must get some benefit from sort of being able to reconnect with like the type of dog fan that isn't going to come up to Athens two or three times a season, but that they might want to hit up for some money, but lives around the Atlanta metro. There could be some value to that for Georgia. No?
They all live around the Atlanta metro. That's the problem.
Yeah. It's a home game, literally.
Okay. North Carolina, NC State. Richard, Drake May's possibly last college game.
Stinks. Possibly the last time we see Caleb Williams, possibly the last time we see Drake May. Neither of them will have won anything. A couple of them won a couple division championships. That's it.
Max coming back, though.
That stinks.
And Cal and UCLA in a battle of UC system schools. UCLA, I think, has had, especially after what happened against USC last week, a pretty nice looking quasi rebuilding year that could wind up 8-4 here. That has not placated everybody. I have seen some UCLA fans and media discussing a firing. That would be weird to me given the shape of things this year and the fact that Dante Moore is in this program now, but there's that big week possibly, I guess, for Chip Kelly. And on the Cal side, chance to get bowl eligible in the last year of being in this conference. Cool. And I would feel partially vindicated for thinking that Cal might be okay this year. They have been okay. It'd be nice if they could go to a bowl game. That's rivalry.
Alex, you've had this weird habit the last couple of weeks of omitting one game of note. Do you know what game you omitted this week?
Oh my God, I feel so bad. What was it?
Louisville and Kentucky.
Oh my God.
Wait, shit.
I did. Thank you.
This is the Mark Stoops spot. You tried to do this when they played Alabama and you were saved from the better angels of your nature, namely me and Stephen Godfrey. This is the one.
Well, could be. We'll see. Yes. Maybe. I shame on me for 6 weeks for forgetting to put this one in the rundown. I look through the schedule and I just forget about it.
Dude, I'm telling you, Louisville's the invisible playoff contender. I mean, I don't think they end up in the Final Four or anything like this, but it's crazy how quiet and good they've been. It just, shout out to the Cards.